I was upset with him that he wasn't fully telling us about all of the meetings that he was having. And he said to me, but I'm briefing the president. I'm briefing Chief of Staff Mulvaney. I'm briefing Secretary Pompeo, and I've talked to Ambassador Bolton. Who else do I have to deal with? And the point is, we have a robust interagency process that deals with Ukraine. It includes Mr. Holmes. It includes Ambassador Taylor as the chargé in Ukraine. It includes a whole load of other people. But it struck me one yesterday when you put up on the screen Ambassador Sondland's emails and who was on these emails, and he said, these are the people who need to know that he was absolutely right, because he was being involved in a domestic political errand. And we were being involved in national security foreign policy, and those two things had just diverged. So he was correct, and I had not put my finger on that at the moment, but I was irritated with him and angry with him that he wasn't fully coordinating. And I did say to him, Ambassador Sondland, Gordon, I think this is all going to blow up, and here we are.
You're going to the jail.
It is Friday, November 22nd, 2019. Welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. It is impeachment week number two. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in the state and national politics. Today's show, devastating testimony at this week's impeachment hearings.
You're going to the jail. That's a felony also.
Former Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch and former Trump National Security Council advisor Fiona Hill were the right choices to bookend a week of devastating impeachment hearings. That's for sure. Women warriors, no doubt. And Pete Buttigieg jumps into the lead in recent polls in Iowa and New Hampshire. I'm not going to say I told you, Sean, but I told you so. But then you look at the national polls, and bizarrely enough, Bernie and Biden are now tied at 27%. Elizabeth Warren is doing the best she can to hurt her campaign by stumbling all over Medicare for All. Frankly, it was a bit of a disappointing week for me when looking at Warren's campaign. On today's Pennsylvania Focus, former Democratic State Senator from Luzerne County, John Yudichak, takes a profile in courage and declares himself an independent and will now caucus with the alt-right, the Republicans. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf, I can't believe I gotta say this, reached a deal on the minimum wage, wait for it, workers can now look forward to a whopping $9.50 an hour by 2022. And food service workers stuck at $2.83 an hour. But no worries. The governor worked with Republicans and the Chamber of Commerce to reach a deal while leaving Democrats and union leaders out of the talks. Because that's going to help Republicans win? I don't know. In order to get the deal, this is the other thing, right? You got to give to get, right? So here you go. Governor Wolf also agreed to ease off implementing overtime rules that would have helped tens of thousands of more low-income workers. See? You get a $9.50 an hour award, and what else do you get? You get more screwing over of low-income workers. It's great. It's a twofer. Can't believe it. And if that's not maddening enough, Governor Wolf nominated Drew Compton. And I'm gonna hit my head against the wall for a second here. Hold on. Drew Compton, Senator Scarnati's Senator Scarnati's chief of staff to the Commonwealth Court. Yeah, nominated Scarnati's chief of staff to the Commonwealth Court. Crompton has come under scrutiny for never presiding or prosecuting a case in the courtroom, most likely never wrote an official legal opinion, and was recently caught using Senator Scarnati's campaign credit card to celebrate his 50th birthday in Las Vegas. It's a win-win-win-win-win this week. Unfrickin' believable. I don't know what you're trying to do, like, other than drive the Democratic Party in Pennsylvania off the freaking cliff. Here we go. Hey, at least it'll be fun, right? My God. Speaking of fun, in today's last call, Tesla reveals its long-awaited pickup truck. Well, possible designs have been floating around for months. No one, however, was quite prepared for what drove out into the stage last night. Let's say it's a cross between a stealth fighter and an F-150. Welcome to your cyberpunk future, folks. And although before we go all Blade Runner and stuff like that, I think they're going to have to fix the bulletproof windows. They went to demonstrate that it has bulletproof windows. So they took a little kind of some metal balls and threw it at the windows, and the windows broke. Unbelievable. And this week in Free Will, oh my God, they've got another stout that's rolling out called The Most Fun. It is a foreign extra stout brewed in collaboration with longtime friends from the Keystone Hops Homebrew Club. Looks like it's going to be awesome. Their last one was amazing. And I'm telling you, Black Friday is going to be absolutely huge at Free Will as Ralphius and Ella return. Ralphius is their kind of annual Imperial Stout aged in bourbon barrels, and Ella is a Belgian quad aged in apple brandy barrels. I can't even list for you all the varieties that are coming out, so I'm just going to direct you to their Facebook page and direct you to their website, because they've got things with cherries, with apricots. They've got things that are just look amazing. The vanilla Ralphius alone, oh my God, unbelievable. Black Friday, folks. I want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And you got to make sure that you download the Rick Smith Show's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. Oh, boy. If we want a progressive future, we need a progressive media. I'm not feeling it so great today, folks. It's especially here in Pennsylvania. But help me pick up off the ground and kind of move forward as I've damaged and bruised my head after listening to the Tom Wolf stuff by becoming a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. If you're not ready to become a member, no problem. Just go to ragingchickenpress.org and click the big blue donate button on the right sidebar. But the best way to keep investing and keeping the media in the movement in the media, becoming a member as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Whoo, Sean. Sean, I got to say, Sean.
I'm glad it's Friday.
Well, I am glad it's Friday. and I tell you, I wasn't in that bad of a mood, but I've been stressed to the as far as I can be stressed. I'm at a near breaking point at this point, but I was not in a bad mood today until I talked to you this morning.
You know, like, there are not many times when Democrats, legislators and staffers are universally pissed off in the Capitol. Mm-hmm. This was one of those weeks.
Well,
this was one of those weeks that, like, and it was maddening to be there, but, like, Governor Wolf put himself one man crew on a ship and no one else was with him with this. Like, there was just, I know some of the details just from being in the Capitol. I'm not going to get into it, but like, there were plenty of contentious caucus meetings with the governor and members from the different caucuses, the House Democrats, the Senate Democrats, and other groups. And everyone got their turn to hold the Festivus poll this week, as Sarah Inamorato said. So,
nice, well put.
So that was the type of that's how these caucus meetings went with the minimum wage, and you know it's extremely disheartening to work on something like this for a couple of years of your life to just in one foul swoop in a weekend have or over a course of time have someone negotiate this way behind your back. And just throw away all the hard work that you've put forward to this. No, it sucks. And the responses with the minimum wage, no, even if this gets signed into law, we're not going to stop fighting for a $15 an hour minimum wage, regardless of who's in office in 2022, regardless who the next governor is. We're going to stop. We're going to let Wolf know we're not we're not going to stop fighting for $15 an hour minimum wage, and we're going to let the next governor know, and we're going to let the next people running for governor know in the primary.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's the response. That is the only adequate response to what happened this week. I mean, I think we heard in the intro this we got sold out.
Yep,
and that's it.
Yep,
I don't know how else we could say it.
No, I don't.
I also think it also says that the governor does not believe that his peers who are millionaires, who own the means of production, who own businesses, he does not think that they should be morally responsible to pay their workers a living wage.
Yep.
Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. I did.
I bet you didn't.
No, and I think if we're going to talk about morality and stuff like that, the governor does not believe that his peers have the moral responsibility to take care of their workers.
Oh, come on. Give me a break.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think that's absolutely right. Well, we're going to get into all that. And that was not the only ugly that was happening here in Pennsylvania, too. We'll get that into part two. I mean,
it was a hell of a week in the Capitol.
Yeah, No, exactly.
All on the same day, Utechek switching parties, Crompton's nomination coming out. Crompton's nomination was really released like fucking 4:50 on Monday when everyone was out of the Capitol.
My God. My God. So that's happening here in Pennsylvania, all amidst the backdrop of probably, the fourth time in American history that we have a president who is facing impeachment. So it's been a banner week all the way along, as you got to say. But I do have to say, I want to just talk a little bit kind of about kind of your take on the impeachment hearings. We don't know if these hearings are going to continue. There are no more hearings scheduled at this point. There's some talk, at least as of this morning, there was some talk that there might be some additional folks that are called to testify. But the last I had heard that they were looking, their plan at this point is to begin to start writing a report that will be basically arguing for articles of impeachment that will be passed on to the judiciary. So let's just talk a little bit about kind of, Sean, if you're thinking back on this week, what's your kind of sense of where things are? And also, was this useful?
I didn't get to watch Yovanovitch and or the other two who testified that day, Volker and Morrison.
Mm-hmm. Well, Yovanovitch was last Friday. She's
okay.
The one. Yeah.
So I watched Yovanovitch, and I didn't. Morrison and Volker and whoever was before that.
Paul
that
Taylor. There was. Oh, you watched Taylor one though. That was like that.
I
was
watched
last
Taylor,
Wednesday,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think what we heard this week was absolutely devastating.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think Sondland's testimony puts it out there. I mean, like, you see what the Republicans are shooting for, which is a classic RICO mob case.
Right.
Try to muddy the waters. Basically, like, everyone has plausible deniability, so you can't pin it on the man at the top. I think it's a classic, like, mob case. I mean, you've been saying this since day one.
Yep.
Yep. And here we are.
Well, it's exactly like that piece from Fiona Hill, like we heard at the intro, like, and here we are, and this is where it gets. I mean, because I think that is the only way you understand what's been going on here. And then and absolutely. And, I think by putting Sondland, his testimony out there,
I mean, I thought all the testimony was damning. The other one, I didn't get to see Vinland either. But like, I mean,
Vinland was freaking powerful.
I watched the recaps of that. I mean, I just think like Sondland, I think everyone who spoke was just damning.
Well, like, I think the Vinland testimony, I think, is even has another layer to it. I mean, there's no doubt about it. His testimony by itself, right, on the content of what he was saying was just devastating and damning to the Republicans and to Trump. However, what I think is going to live on even more about that is Devin Nunes, right, and Jim Jordan attacking him and trying to discredit him. Right, on the stand as he's sitting there in his full dress uniform and with his Purple Heart and his kind of other awards, and he has got a story about coming to this country to escape prosecution and persecution in the Soviet Union, and to watch these Republicans having absolutely no commitment whatsoever to anything they espouse in terms of like support of the military and try to discredit this guy. It was disgusting. And I think that is going to have a long-standing effect on certain kind of areas of the country, especially particularly in military families, to see that.
Oh yeah. And I mean, I think at this point you go forward with it.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like, I think after this testimony, there's just no going back. I think once the articles are drafted and voted upon on the full House floor, it's going to be interesting to see what Republicans switch over, because some Republicans in the Fox News sphere. Did you hear Ken Starr this week?
No, I didn't hear Ken Starr.
Ken Starr pretty much said it's time for a bunch of Democrat or Republican senators considering take that walk down to 1600 and, you know, tell Trump he has to leave. Like, Ken Starr is like on Fox News saying someone's going to have to step up, pull a Nixon and tell him he has to go.
Well, I'm telling you, because Fox, and when you have Fox News cannot even craft a narrative to kind of hold this in at this point. And that tells you something.
I mean, I honestly thought, I didn't know how the Democrats were going to handle this beforehand. I think that this was a masterclass from them, from Schiff.
I agree. I give him that, all the props.
They've gone beyond, like, he kept it composed. I loved how he treated Nunes in a condescending way. Just, yeah, okay, are you done? Like, yep. That type of stuff. Like,
thank you, minority leader.
like pat them on the head for like the child that they are, mm-hmm. and just keep on going and not engage. And no, it's
well, and I have to say his especially during the last, like this past, the latter half of this week, the testimonies from there. Adam Schiff's summation kind of at the ends were fantastic. I mean, I didn't know he had it in him, like, because it was a mix of here's the summary and the narrative. This is what had just happened, what you just heard. We bring it all together. And then there was indignation and anger and kind of like and righteous anger, like in the way that we should be angry. And yeah. I think that the having that kind of that also that effective component to it. Was so important. So I mean, I think I got to give it to him. I'm not a big fan of Adam Schiff. Just kind of in general, I was worried especially at the onset of the impeachment hearings that, especially when he was giving his opening lines of questionings before they turned it over to Democratic counsel, I thought this was going to be the Adam Schiff show, and he's going to let his ego get in the way. But I think at the end of the day, that did not happen. And I agree with you that he ran it as a masterclass. It really is. This is the way this is supposed to work.
Yeah, no, and now, like, the evidence is there. And now we go to the fun part, which we tie that fucking anchor around their necks and watch them sink. Do you want to sink or swim?
Yep.
Like, it's going to be interesting to see which side of the aisle those Republicans line up on.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Nunes and I. Again, this week you saw the story about Nunes coming out where Nunes was hopping around Ukraine with Rudy's two people. You think Nunes might be going to jail at this point?
Well, at this point, I think that, you know, I would like to see criminal referrals, right, for a whole bunch of these people.
Now, do you think there were deals in place that they wouldn't give criminal referrals to some of the people who testified this week? Like, say, Morrison and Volcker,
right,
who are trying to claim plausible deniability, but you got them to speak, and it was pretty damning anyway.
Look, I think that when I'm thinking about criminal referrals, I'm thinking people like Pompeo.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because Pompeo, not only was he at running point in the State Department,
and
he held back all that evidence, and he held back the Sutherland even saying he was pissed off that he wasn't able to kind of review his own papers.
So on Ring of Fire with Sam Cedar, if you mm-hmm. watch on YouTube, he had a really good interview a couple weeks ago with someone talking about like what happens next, like after this, mm-hmm. and the way it plays out, because now everyone's implicated. So do you just give blanket immunity to Pence? And them saying, we will give you immunity if Trump leaves.
Give you immunity if you don't fucking run.
What's that?
If he doesn't run for president.
Yeah.
Trump leaves and he's not allowed to run. Otherwise, they're gonna drop the criminal prosecution on Pence.
Yeah. Or, like, Trump resigns now, doesn't run, and his family's saved from any state-level investigations that are going on right now. Like, I mean, like, he's there. Like, that's what's going to have to be done to get him out.
We'll see. I mean, yeah. The thing is,
I mean, this week it got a whole lot harder for everyone involved, because you got to think about it. If Trump loses, they're all fucked after he's out of office.
But that's the thing. I think heads got to roll. All right. And I don't think we're talking just about, like, it's just to get him out of office, then everybody gets a scot-free. There's got to be consequences somehow.
Yeah.
And I haven't considered that question that you just asked in a kind of a really thoughtful way. Well, like, what kind of deal would be here? But
at this point, you got to think Pelosi has all the leverage. I mean, Democrats have the leverage in this.
Yeah, Pelosi doesn't know how to fucking pull the damn lever, though. I mean, so, I mean, I that's the problem.
Like,
and I think she is more inclined, right, to kind of, like, say, hey, everybody, nobody will go to jail if Trump leaves. And then I will personally give you my assurance there'll be no additional prosecutions or something like this, and they'll come up with some sort of fucking agreement. I don't think that's necessary. If they have not given – because, like, what they did, especially with Morrison, right? Because Morrison, if you listen to his opening statement, he's an ideological warrior, right? Mm-hmm. He is a right-wing Republican. He is a hawk, right? And so he went in there. I think he went in there thinking, like, yeah, we're gonna go get him. And he got there and he's like, oh, everything Fiona Hill just told me to watch out for, I'm witnessing firsthand right now. Lawyer! You know, where's the lawyer? And what they did in the questioning, and this is seriously, that...
I'm watching that part, like, when he's just like, by the way, you might want to watch out for this phone call that might happen. And then it happens, like, 2 days later, like, imagine, like, right, sitting on that, like, and just, like, the shock on their faces.
Right.
Like.
Right. Well, the thing was, in the questioning of that, right, for the Democratic Council, right, when pushing Morrison, and they literally, it was like they walked him up to the edge of the cliff. And it was basically like, you tell the truth, or we take another step. You know? And I think that's what they wanted. They basically wanted to get to the point where all the pieces and all the testimony is leading to the absolute conclusion, right, that this was freaking the dirtiest deal possible, but they didn't make him say it.
Did the Republican council even ask questions this week?
Oh, he did. He was like, but did you see him with Fiona Hill?
No.
Oh, it was unbelievable, Sean. She's sitting there. Here's what happens, right?
I was watching Twitter, and apparently, like, he was just, like, lobbing up softballs. That would just, like, that just
undermine Trump. He's like, I got nothing. I mean, every line, when she basically came out and her opening statement was, you are peddling conspiracy theories that are being put forward, right, by Russian intelligence, right? And now what used to be Russian intelligence has made its way into our own political system.
And also, like, I mean, like, Hill and Bolton are ideological warriors
totally.
Themselves.
These are not progressives, right?
But these also aren't, like, ideological, like, Trump warriors. These are neocon,
exactly.
Project for a New American Century, like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so we're not talking
empire building warriors.
Right. Right. These were, you know, I mean, absolutely. Right. The fact that, you know, that she is on the same side with Bolton, and Bolton is actually consulting her to go to the lawyers too as well, right? And she's like, oh, I didn't need Bolton to tell me. It's like, you know, whatever. But, you know, these are all people, and even, you know, the two Republicans, people who were called by the Republicans, right, which is, Volker and Morrison.
Morrison.
They were like, I mean, really? those are the best you got? Right. And because they basically laid it all out.
Nothing.
Right. Exactly. right? I mean, I love watching Morrison squirm, though, by, you know, them saying, okay, so let me get this straight. You heard the phone call, and immediately after the phone call, you go to the lawyers, and you tell them that this phone call has just take place. And you're telling me you went to the lawyers because you didn't think anything was wrong? Like, no, I just went to the lawyers because I thought they didn't know.
I went to the lawyers because Fiona Hill told me to go to the lawyers once this phone call
right,
happened.
Exactly. Right. So, but nowhere in that did you think that you're going to the lawyers because you heard something that was wrong, right? And everyone in that room, anyone watching that, knows exactly that's why he went there, right? And just as he's getting to the point where you can see him start to sweat, I mean, it was beautiful. I mean, this was like a beautiful line of questioning, right to the point where he's like getting squirmy in his seat and stuff like this. Like, Democratic counsel goes like, okay, and kind of moves on. Basically said, we can make you say it, that you have to make you have to decide whether you're going to perjure yourself now, right? Or you're going to 100% sell out, and sell out in front of here and know what the consequences are going to be. But you know what? We appreciate your testimony. You know, it's kind of like, boom. That was rocking. Because basically what that does is that puts them in a holding position when it, like, going forward, right? That they know, okay, I step back on this.
And this guy's a mob prosecutor too.
Totally. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right? I mean, it was great. It was great. But the thing was about what Fiona Hill and why I think she was absolutely so incredibly powerful in her testimony is because she went right at the root of the problem, right? Which is the fucking garbage that's going on in the Republican Party, right? And they're giving cover for Trump, right? And that was an important part. The fact that she came on and she bookend Sundland, this is what I kept, the main issue that I wanted to kind of come to today on this, why I thought was so important. You have Sundland come on and basically point to everyone, you're going to the jail, you're going to the jail, you're going to the jail, right? Basically saying everybody who's in it and naming names, basically he's telling everybody, I'm not going to be the fall guy here. I'm going to say you're all in there. But then he wants to understand, right, what he did is kind of like, look, this was out in the open. Everybody was included. Right. And basically, I didn't know there's this quid pro quo thing with the weapons. I thought it was just about a meeting. And that was, but everybody knew about that. And so you can say what you want. Right. They wanted to kind of let him off the hook a little bit. What Fiona Hill comes in and says, right, it says, yeah, you know what? He was actually right. And I hadn't kind of like realized that's all until I saw who was on the emails and what he had said to me in those meetings is basically that. Yeah, everyone who was involved with the political errand was in on it, right? Everyone who was involved with national security and foreign policy was excluded, right? So they basically said, here it is. And it goes right back to the very beginning, right? The very first testimony with Paul Taylor, right? With Taylor coming out and basically saying there was a regular channel and there was an irregular channel. And then we come back and Fiona Hill comes in and says, yep, what he said was just confirmation. So don't lose sight of the fact that, you know, he can say, look, we do. Everything was above board. We didn't think we were doing anything wrong. Yeah, because what you thought you were doing was running a political errand for the president, not exercising American foreign policy. And she was, you know, frankly, when she was being questioned by Cantor, right, he basically asked this question and starts to do his, like, I don't know what his deal is, because he's like the weirdest individual that they could have possibly put on TV for there, right? And he actually, if you watch the testimony too as well, when he asked her a question about what Sundland had said, and she said that she even acknowledged, she's like, and when I first said, well, who put you in charge of Ukrainian policy, and she said, I'd admit I was a bit rude to him. Right. And then she says, but then he said the president, and she says, and that shut me up. When she says that, there's a split screen right from there. And Cantor looks up and he gets this devil smirk on his face, like that. He just for a moment, and he loved it. He loved the fact that Trump made her shut up, and he gets a thrill out of it. You could see it right on the screen. I was like, it was so telling. But then immediately he's back down. And the fact that then she rolls on from there, and he's like, it's like deer in the headlights. It's like he's got nothing. He's like, he looks like he's as like drawn in by her compelling testimony as everyone else in the room. And then what happens at that point is that Nunez basically like says, okay, why don't you go for a bathroom break? I'm going to go take over and go back to our like ideological warrior conspiracy theory shit, and basically excludes him for the rest of the time because he's got nothing.
You know, they're they're done. I mean, it's amazing that they misplayed their hand with this.
There's no hand.
There was
to play,
no
though.
Hand to play. Yeah,
that's just, the problem.
Yeah, like that didn't. Yeah, no.
I mean, if anything should come out of this at this point, at least in terms of the hearing. Now, look, we know the politics of the scenario of the situation.
Now it's incumbent upon the Democrats to turn this into a political issue.
There you go. Yep, exactly.
Facebook ads, YouTube ads,
everything,
everything, just
100%
carpet bombing all the social media sites with everything that's happened this past week, and just turn them into political ads because Trump's already doing it.
Yep,
and there's already right wing groups doing it because I'm already getting it on my like YouTube feeds.
Yep,
and now it's the messaging game.
Yep, absolutely.
I think we all have,
and the organizing game.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, like, how can
gloves
Scott
off
Perry,
everybody?
What
gloves
yeah.
off?
Yeah, like how can Scott Perry answer to this anymore? Like, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, it's done.
Absolutely.
I mean, Scott Perry decided to dance around for the past month making an ass out of himself in the lead up to this, and now it's like.
Yep, it's like lean in, everybody.
Egg
lean
is all
in.
Over your face.
Yep, lean right in and run with this, and just go and 100%. And you know, and now I've said before,
like I wouldn't make this a sole issue, but I would fucking make this an issue. Like there are plenty of issues I would make, but like this is one of them.
No, but the thing is, right, is that everything. This is like this is the issue that keeps them pinned in place.
Especially
right?
like especially Scott Perry, who likes to use his war record here out in central Pennsylvania. You know, just use videos of. Him and Jim Jordan together, and Jim
That's
Jordan
it, right
attacking
there.
Vinland.
That's it, right there.
I mean,
I agree.
That,
yep.
Like in this district, especially, you have two military bases. You have Fort Indiantown Gap. You have the Carlisle Barracks. You have another naval barracks in Mechanicsburg. There's three bases within this district right here. I mean, like,
I don't know, but you know, I've heard billboards are effective. I'm just saying.
I may know a person. About
yeah, exactly. And I think, and I'm telling you, there should be, if those districts should be bombarded, right, with television ads, with radio ads, right? And I agree with you. It's the Jim Jordan did, right, to Vinland, right?
And just tie
right, put Perry right next to him, right? And just hit that again and again and again, right? Because, look, I mean, that's going to put him on the defensive, right? And then you hit him with all the other stuff too as well. I mean, that's what's got to happen right now. It's got to be so freaking aggressive. And the thing is that it's, you know, I think it, again, once the strength right now is for Democrats not to suddenly get afraid of their power, because that has been the history of Democratic parties since they've, like, you know, left the working class behind and kind of embraced the professional middle class. And then so what they have to start doing now is kind of embracing that fighting spirit that we're seeing emerging in the progressive areas of the party that are finally getting our legs back.
And you know what I think? You know, I'm glad I did. I'm glad I went to that that event with the Navy secretary here in Harrisburg, with the USS Harrisburg that Perry was at.
Yeah.
Was able to get pictures of some really nice meme-worthy pictures of Perry. Where I have like Perry lined up on one side and a lot of open space for a nice little quote on the other.
Nice.
Oh no, that's what I think about when I go to these things.
Yeah, you got to do it, man. You got to do right. it. So that's our kind of impeachment stuff. So I just want to talk a little bit about the other big story this week is what's happening in the kind of the presidential race. You know, frankly, I don't think we need to spend too much time on the debates because it was, frankly,
I slept through them.
Well, I'm telling you, it's like going over the same ground again. I mean, it's to be honest with you, the debates, especially the last one and this one, I watched part of it, was kind of disappointing.
Biden fucked up big time in the debate.
Surprise,
that the only African American woman ever in the Senate endorsed him, while he's standing next to the other. Only African American woman to ever serve in the Senate.
Yep. Exactly. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And he said that the way that you combat domestic violence is you keep punching it and punching it and punching it and punching it until you give the culture a black eye. I mean, like, really? That was the fucking most the most kind of like disturbing like moment. Either that or kind of like waiting for, if you watched him, especially at the very beginning when he's looking straight on, like you're looking at that one eye is getting kind of like extra red and you're just waiting for it to pop a blood vessel again. I mean, that was not a good showing for Biden, that's for sure.
No, and then Biden also had a thing happen yesterday where he told a told an immigration activist who called him out over Obama's deportations, just go ahead and go vote for Trump.
Yeah, wait, no, set the scene for this, because you just shared it with me. I did not see this yesterday.
So like this,
tell that scene.
This is a town hall in South Carolina. There's probably a couple hundred people there in this hall. And he was getting hammered by protesters about the Obama deportations. The person that confronted him, I don't know if it was a woman that was undocumented immigrant who needed a translator, but the person that was speaking explained someone's story, whether it was theirs or the activist they were with, that they were a volunteer for Obama in 2008, and that he called, and then, you know, and that these are two brown people, like Mexican immigrants, and you know, and Biden, and he called out Biden over Obama's massive deportation plan that led to what we have now with Trump, and Biden turned around and said, just go vote for Trump, and why don't you go vote for Trump, and just walked away.
It was stunning. I mean, I'm going to put the link to this in the show notes, and I really encourage people to go check it out, because it's, when you see it, it's even more disturbing, right? Or telling, however you want to frame it, than to see him walk away, because it's not just like he turns and walks away like a little bit. He like walks, I mean, a good 20 paces away from him with his back turned to him as he's talking.
Yeah.
It's something else. I mean, it tells you that, you know, he is upset that the kids are, you know, not, you know,
playing nice.
Well, they're being seen and, you know, and heard. Right. Yeah. You know, that's the problem. But so there's that. I have to say the other part of it, I want to talk about the polls in a second, but I want to say that, Elizabeth Warren right now, is, I'm
squandering her.
I'm telling you, it's upsetting to me. People know that, like, my perspective on this has been, look, you've got two wings of the progressive wing, right? You know, two kind of parts of the progressives, of Sanders and Warren. And I've supported Bernie last election. I've been kind of like supported here, but I look at this election and I'm like, I would say I was kind of like agnostic in some ways about which one of these folks goes forward. I wanted to kind of wait to see what goes forward. But either one, I think it changes how the movement relates to each one of these candidates. I thought that Warren had a really strong shot. But watching what she's been doing on Medicare for All in this kind of stumbling and this kind of like retreat from the, like, I'm with Bernie on Medicare for All to now, like, I sound more like Pete Buttigieg now. What I think the consequence of that is going to be is that you're gonna have those activists who have basically been kind of like me, right, on this, in this place where you're not like, you know, Bernie or Busters, right? But you want to see kind of progressive and you want to kind of like invest in a campaign. Those folks that were kind of leaning over on the Elizabeth Warren side, those are going to start peeling off, and I think they're going to go to Bernie. Because I think that, you know, what matters right now, like I was saying here, is that there's got to be authenticity and consistency and say we're not going to be fooled again. Right. And so I think that that's going to be the consequence. And I don't know how she digs out of this one without coming back really strongly. And it's in my mind, it's been a bit painful to watch, because I think she is still such a strong candidate. But I think that's going to cause problems when it comes to the general.
Yeah. I know. I mean, we were talking about this earlier, like with her saying she's going to wait for the third year, she's squandering that opportunity. Like if we win this election, we only have like 12 to 18 months to get through an agenda that we need.
That's right.
You don't have a 2-year window. You don't have a 3-year window. No, the windows to get these progressive reforms done happen within, like, progressive reforms in the past happen over years. They happen over months of time. And you have to ram these through within months. Or you lose that opportunity.
Well, look,
and you don't get that opportunity once. It's literally like a once in a generation chance. And like, if we get it, we have to ram through the agenda we want, because we won't have that for long.
And look, and like, again, I mean, I don't know how many times we've had to say this, Sean, but it's like, here's a perfect example of, like, you know, you don't start negotiating with the floor. Right. You start at the roof. Right. And instead, because basically, like, her plan that she has out there. If she was elected and she went to her team and she said, OK, see this? This is the absolute bottom of what we're willing to do here. Right. This is the absolute bottom. But we're going to go. We're starting with Bernie. And this is our absolute bottom. Instead, you started on the ground floor. You start on the ground floor. You know where you end up. You end up in the basement.
And that's a bad thing. So last thing to kind of wrap this up a little bit, I wanted your take on like the rise of Pete Buttigieg. As you know, I mean, I know that you say you can't stand him, and I would keep on saying I think you're dismissing the comfy factor, the comfortable factor, and I think that's playing itself out now in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Someone's going to come up with a messaging strategy to go after him. Because, I mean, like, what experience – yeah, no. I still think you go after him about his experience. I think you pull the gloves off and you hit him hard on his issues with race and gentrification back in South Bend, and you start doing that stuff. I think it's time to start to take the gloves off and start getting dirty with him. I think it's pretty apparent that Biden's not going to get the nomination.
No, and I think, right now, having 10 people still in the race is actually benefiting Buttigieg right now, because you don't get to drill down into what he's saying. It's all about messaging right now for him. It's all that McKenzie messaging or whatever. I mean, you know, because right now they're showing the latest ones. The polls are coming up. You got Buttigieg up by 7 in Iowa, and you've got Buttigieg up by, in New Hampshire, up by 10. Right, they're showing in the in New
like,
York.
I think Buttigieg would absolutely lose to Trump in general.
I think so, because you basically he's a guy who's basically said
all fluff, no messaging, no.
Well, look, look at pure politics. He's a guy who started with like I support Medicare for all, and he's basically sold out all progressive principles. So guess what? I like it or not, folks, is that everyone that's been organizing with Warren or organizing with Bernie, right, is not going to be organizing for Buttigieg. They might vote for Buttigieg, but they're not going to be knocking doors and they're not going to be organizing on it. And so this is time. I mean, again, all hands on deck. I mean, and we're going to see when it comes to Iowa. Again, the polling does not capture the organizing that's been going on. So these polls could be completely off, but it's enough to kind of like everybody's got to wake up and get moving on this. So we shall see. Well, next week, will Pete Buttigieg's lead hold? We shall see. All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break. When we come right back, we're going to get into the mess that is Pennsylvania. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Remind you, go to patreon.com/RCPress, become a member today.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1909. That was the day that a young garment worker by the name of Clara Lemlich made a speech that would have a resounding impact on the labor movement in New York City. Lemlich was at a union meeting where she sat listening to men discuss whether garment workers should call a general strike. Finally, she asked to speak. She said, "I have listened to all of the speakers, and I have no further patience for talk. I am a working girl, one of those striking against intolerable conditions. I am tired of listening to speakers who talk in generalities. What we are here for is to decide whether or not to strike. I make a motion that we go out in a general strike." The female shirtwaist makers were trapped in unskilled, poorly paying jobs. This workforce was more than 70% women, mainly Italian and Jewish immigrants. These bottom-tier workers worked for $3 to $4 per week. Semi-skilled operators earned between $7 and $12 per week. At the top of the hierarchy stood the highly skilled cutters and pattern makers, who in some cases could earn more than $20 a week. The day after Clara's inspiring speech, 15,000 shirtwaist workers walked out of their workplaces. Workers at 339 of the 352 shirtwaist manufacturing companies in New York City went out on strike. It grew and became known as the Uprising of the 20,000. It was the largest strike by women up until that moment in American history. Strikers faced opposition from manufacturers, the police, and the courts. The strike was not settled until February of the following year. Factory owners agreed to meet the workers' demands, including higher pay and shorter hours. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, here once again with Sean Kitchen. And, you know, again, workers in the capital of Pennsylvania wanted a kind of a living wage. You know what they got?
Fucking nosy. Eat your marigold.
That's what they got. That's
surprise,
right.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, but,
that's,
you know.
A felony also.
That
man,
should
just
be.
Going through all that.
I don't know what's going on, man. All my sounds are crazy going cycling. I think we kind of touched upon the kind of frustration right at the top of the show at this point. And I we'll see what happens from here. I mean, I think that we're going to start to see a whole
so
bunch
also, there's,
of.
There's a couple. There's going to be some horse trading going on. And it's going to be to see how much Wolf wants this. And there's a charter school bill we should all be watching happening as well. That should absolutely be vetoed. It's HB 1800. What it does is it was supposed to be a bill that goes after Harrisburg with vouchers, and it got amended in committee over the week. And when it got amended in committee, it pretty much forces all school districts in third class cities, so like Reading, Allentown, and stuff like that, to provide 50% of their funding with vouchers.
Jesus Christ.
So this is going to be going through the House. Terzai might be willing to hold up the minimum wage for this bill to get signed. This charter school bill absolutely needs to be killed. And if this is what holds up the minimum wage bill, then
so be it.
But there's a couple of other things that happened.
You want to start with Utechak?
Yeah,
so because here's my question with it. Well, first, you'll tell the story about it there too as well. But my question for you is, I mean, there have been a lot of hope that there's some traction in order to begin to kind of at least make some major inroads and kind of flipping the Senate or flipping the House, the state.
This makes it that much harder to flip the Senate.
Yeah,
Utechak is leaving. He left the Democratic Party. He declared himself an independent. And then he is going to be caucusing with the Republicans. So he is he's making a craven political move that will backfire because Republicans – this district, it's still pretty hard for Republicans to win up there. He wants to be an independent and still try to hold on to that seat. His issue was the purists in the caucus that got elected.
That's the quote that's been going around. Yeah.
Yes, a.k.a. the women who've been getting shit done this year.
Exactly, right. Exactly.
Yes, the women who've – I mean, you think about it. Like, for the better, Katie Muth, Lindsey Williams, and all them changed this Democratic caucus in the Senate for the better. And people like Utechak resent that there's people actually doing work, wanting to become in the majority. And he thinks that there's too much of an ideological purity test going on.
Yeah, well,
the Democratic Party.
Yeah, well, they probably don't. You know, he probably doesn't like the fact that you know, all those white men are being called to task for all their abuse throughout the years too.
Yeah, and apparently he's really good friends with Dalen Leach.
Well, there you go.
And doesn't like how that is all playing out. You know, him getting attacked and all, but apparently, like, he's never really caucused with the Democrats at all.
So he just kind of like holds the seat.
he just never showed up to caucus. Like someone said, he might have been in caucus 30 minutes this whole entire year.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Oh boy.
Shows where his priorities are at.
Yep. There you go. So that matters.
No. Right? He wants to go. He wants to play a purity test. So, I mean, like, where did the purity tests or the ideological tests? I guess he's okay with a caucus full of people who don't want women to have abortions, who want to force women to have pregnancies, keep pregnancies they don't want, who are white nationalists, who are racist. Like, come on. Like, don't play that bullshit.
Yep. Well.
And I think we should talk about the biggest thing this week on top of the minimum wage. I know we have to,
but it's making me so mad even thinking about it. But go ahead.
I'm assuming this is part of like the horse trading that got done as well for a bunch of stuff this week. Senator Pro Tempore's chief of staff, Drew Crompton, has been nominated to the Commonwealth Court. And for those of you who don't know, in Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth Court is an appellate court. that deals with any court case that involves a government entity within the state. So that means Temple, Pashey Schools, anything that is associated with the Commonwealth in some government fashion. Like, they deal with appellate cases and they deal with lawsuits involving any state or government entity in the state. Mm-hmm. So this is really important for stuff like redistricting. You know, Drew Crompton was one of the people who most likely was orchestrating Red Map back in 2010, 2011, that gave Republicans the districts they have now. He was completely against the redistricting decision that happened last year that gave Democrats the majority in the U.S. House, you know, from Pennsylvania pretty much. He's most likely never written a legal opinion. And I really think he's most likely never done anything in a courtroom before. And he's getting the seat. Crompton, I mean, let's be real here. If like you can make an award-winning Scorsese playwright between the stuff that Crompton and Scarnati have gotten away with over the years. You know, like, Drew Crompton's wife is a powerful lobbyist with Long and Nyquist, whose sister-in-law is on the gaming board. And a couple of years ago, Crompton and Scarnati got trips to Derby Day down in Kentucky. And it just so happens Churchill Downs gets approved for a casino license in Pennsylvania. Like, a couple months after that happens, like, there's stuff like that happens. Also, Drew Crompton was just caught using Senator Scarnati's campaign credit card to celebrate his 50th birthday in Las Vegas. And that was a big scandal that came out, because what happened was, like, the reporters spent a year digging up, asking for the receipts that are submitted to the Department of State through the campaign finance laws. Not just looking at the reports where they're just like a line item. If you look at our finance reports, these are actual receipts that were used. And this was a massive year-long taking with Spotlight PA, the caucus, and other conglomerate of news organizations in Pennsylvania. And Crompton was using Scarnati's credit card, campaign credit card, even though he does not work with the campaign, to celebrate his 50th in Las Vegas. I mean, there are a number of reasons why he should not be able to get the seat, but yeah, he probably will.
That's disgusting. I mean, it's disgusting. And it, like, if this was part, as you say, if this was part of the horse trading, right? It seems like all the horses are in the other stable.
And everyone wanted Crompton, like, everyone's known Crompton has been looking to get out of this position for a while. You know, if he wanted to retire that bad, you could have squeezed a lot more blood out of this legislation. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, how bad do you want to leave? We're not going to nominate you for the seat.
Yep.
You know, while, like, he gets this nomination happens, you know, there's still a ton of other things like Charter Appeals Board that could have been touched and hasn't been touched in 7 years. Yeah. No.
Yeah. So there you go, folks. You know, and again, this is the kind of thing that I think a lot of,
and this happened less than a year after Wolf gets elected by 17 points. I mean, like, think about that. Like, well, and going into a year where we are looking to flip some chambers. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So, you know, so you basically sell out union members, you sell out low wage workers, which are the base of the Democratic Party, right? You appoint a kind of ideological warrior, which is responsible for Pennsylvania's being underrepresented in the House of Representatives. And, right, you basically, because of your kind of quasi dealings of members of your staff, you got an FBI investigation going on. So all looks good, I guess, on the horizon. I mean, like, as we move into 2020, I mean, come on. It's crazy. It's nuts, man. It's nuts, man. So I can only imagine that you had a little busy week.
Yes. And I mean, like, no, like, every staffer that I talked to, they were all upset. about Crompton, about the minimum wage. Yeah, no, no one was happy about this. Members, I was talking to some House members. They did not find out about this until it hit the newspaper. There were Democratic members who were in charge of running the campaigns in this state. They didn't find out until it hit the newspapers on Friday.
Well, look, Democrats historically are not very good about kind of fighting back, especially when it's kind of dealing with someone in their own party. Does there seem to be an appetite to push back against this among Democrats?
I think the pushback against this is, yes, they're going to vote for this because they're not going to deny people a raise in their wages. But they're not going to stop pushing for a $15 an hour minimum wage, which was the deal that was agreed upon. And that's what that's going to be the response from the unions and from the Democrats who actually want to do this. One fair wage for everyone, including service workers. You know, like, no, like, if the minute this gets signed into law, we're going to be fighting for a $15 an hour minimum wage. End of story.
Yeah, good. Good. Awesome. Well, hey, anything else going on in the state you want to throw in for the day? Not if, like, that's not enough.
Nothing really. They're going to be away. I think they're actually done until the new year, where the House has to come in one day and just pass a bunch of bills on concurrence, and that's about it.
Oh man, crazy. Well, I'll tell you that I'm not going to talk about this at any length today. But last Friday we got the results. We talked about this on the show that the ABSCUF, our state faculty members of the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education, which I'm a member, the votes was in. The new contract is now passed by members, and it was a 94% vote in favor of the tentative agreement, which is depressing in its own right for me. At the very end, and again, I'm not going to go into all the details at this point because I'm too stressed out and I'm tired, and Sean has got a very, very important trip ahead of him. So, so we got to get out of here soon. But so just know that. And we're going to be talking a little bit about what happened with that campaign. Or what happened with that negotiations, and how basically the way that it feels to me, right, is like watching a mobilization around a strike kind of been squandered and a kind of return to business unionism at the center of our union. But you know, we'll get back to that at some point. So anyways, anything else for the good of the order in Pennsylvania, Sean?
Yes, there's actually something people should start paying attention to in Philadelphia. There's going to be a Fund Our Schools campaign that's going to be launching soon. This is about the asbestos issues in Philadelphia public schools.
Right.
I don't think people realize this, but the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers are one of the only public school unions in the state that have actual environmental scientists on staff. And they go into these schools and they've been testing for asbestos and other issues. A teacher was just diagnosed with mesothelioma, public school teacher from working in one of these buildings for 20 years. This is an issue that to start paying attention to and start following online once it pops up. There's going to be a coalition around this, and it's going to be going to go after the legislature to get more funding to take asbestos out of schools, and the Republicans are absolutely against this.
Well, there we have it. Fun never stops in Pennsylvania, everybody. That's a good thing about the state. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this with this week's
Last Call.
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It is last call, everybody. Yes, we talk beer news, we talk fun news, we talk space news, and every other kind of tech fun thing we got going on. Just a couple things for today. There's, again, tons of stuff that we could talk about, but as usual, we're kind of under the gun and lots of too much to do. So the one thing I had to highlight there, I personally will totally kind of cop to it that I was really looking forward to see Tesla's reveal for its pickup truck. As you know, in the U.S., like there's this great Chris Hayes got a podcast, right? Chris Hayes' podcast is called All In, right? It's called Why Is This Happening? His regular show is called All In. He had an interview, and I'm spacing the guy's name. David Roberts? Was it David Roberts? Or was it, no, it wasn't. It was someone else. I'll remember in a minute. But he was talking about climate change, right? And, the guy was saying basically, look, every time that someone gets excited about a Tesla, right, and there's more Teslas on the road, like, I force myself to remember how many F-150s are on the road, right? Ford F-150, the best-selling car in history. Right. And it is also a huge polluter. Right. And the American market, like it or not, when it comes to electrical cars, is it skews towards kind of crossover vehicles, SUVs, and especially pickup trucks. So there's another electric car company that has been developing pickup trucks, but it's not kind of even close to production. And there's been a long rumor that Tesla was going to release his pickup truck. And there's been these concept vehicle pictures and stuff like that have been circulating, and it looks really freaking cool, right? So yesterday was the big, okay, yeah, we've got it. We're getting ready to go to production and everything like this, and they have the big reveal party out there in California, and the truck that kind of drives out that they reveal is this pickup truck that is made out of stainless steel. And it looks like a cross between an F-150 and a stealth fighter. It is the most bizarre thing that ever. Now, and I'll have to say, this is where you know that, like, you know, Elon Musk is indeed a man-child, right? Because that pickup truck that came off, that they kind of brought out, it reminds me of the kind of thing that I was drawing, like, when I was, like, you know, a preteen, about imagining space. Right. That's what that thing seems like. Now, again, if you look at the actual specs of this thing, right, if they move it to production, it is going to be a huge step forward. The problem is that I don't know who's going to buy it. Right. So again, on the one hand, what this might actually be is targeting these kind of like Tesla devotees, right, kind of high-end folks like this, although it comes in at like $39,000, right, comparable to an F-150, something like that, and targeting them to kind of get out there and to kind of like just like, you know, make a big splash, be disruptive like we do in Silicon Valley or whatever it might be. And then I hope my fingers crossed is what the next round is going to be some of those other concept vehicles that we see that come out here, that once this comes out and proves what it can do, then they're actually going to go with something that might be have some more utility other than just kind of like, you know, kind of, you know, preteen boy toy plays stuff. But whatever. But it looks weird. And here's just one quote I'm going to read you about it. This was, I forget where it came from. This is from the USA Today. They're quoting this guy, Sanford Bernstein. He's an analyst.
says, quote, so, okay, this is the article. It, quote, looks weird, like really weird, wrote Stanford Bernstein analyst A.M. Tony Saganashi Jr., whatever. Quote, Musk had warned investors that Tesla's pickup would be really futuristic, like cyberpunk Blade Runner. And he wasn't kidding. Add a little bit of dirt, and you could even say it gives off a retro future vibe a la Mad Max. This is his pitch for it. But so I tell you, when they come out and they basically say this is going to be super strong and it does look like a Mad Max vehicle, you have a guy come out with a sledgehammer, right, to show how strong it is, and he hits the side door and literally no dent, right? It's also supposed to have, say, bulletproof glass, right, breakthrough thing. So they have a couple ball bearings that they're going to show, like, how Bruce says, and he throws the ball bearing at the window, and it breaks the window, and it's stuck there in the window, right? So got to fix that at least. That's at the reveal. So whatever. So that's a big Tesla release. Check out the link because, I mean, at the very least, like as a cultural artifact, you got to see this thing because if this starts hitting the roads, it's going to cause accidents because people are going to be like, what the hell is that? It's an alien car. But check it out. In more important news, let's talk about free will releases, right? So basically, right, it's got more direct impact on my life right now. So this, as I've said a while ago, Free Will has been talking about up in their Stout game, and they had one release already, which was fantastic. And this Saturday, they're coming out with a second round, and this one's called The Most Fun. This is the debut. It is a foreign extra stout brewed in collaboration with the longtime friends of Keystone Hops Homebrew Club. This is a style of stout that was pioneered by Guinness in the early 1800s, designed for export by having a higher ABV and more hops than what is typical for a stout at the time. Much like the origins of the IPA, these developments acted as a natural preservative for long journeys by ship and helped spread the beer worldwide. We use a base of Golden Promise and a variety of specialty malts, along with an appropriate amount of bittering hops, all contributing to a full-body, roasty beer with notes of medium roast coffee, baker's chocolate, and a touch of molasses, and it comes at 6.3 ABV. I'm just giving you their actual description, so that's where that's coming from. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to them for kind of expanding into the stout areas. Because I love stouts. But the big news is that the list of Ralphius and Ella varieties that are going to be coming out on Black Friday are just incredible. So Ralphius and Ella, they come out every year. They're named after the owner's dogs. Ralphius is an imperial stout aged in bourbon barrels, and Ella is a Belgian quad aged in apple brandy barrels, right? And they usually come out with varieties every year, but this year they are just going over the top. And so if you click on the link in the show notes on Black Friday, it'll take you to this page, give you a list. But I want to give you, there's going to be 19 different bottles and cans, right? I'm going to run down a list for you. So there's going to be a black currant Ella, a chocolate orange Ralphius, cinnamon chili Ralphius, coconut chocolate Ralphius, coffee Ralphius, double barrel age Ralphius, the Ella, fig orange Ella, Glendum Ralphius, Kopi Luwak vanilla Ralphius, maple Ella, maple Ralphius and Ralphius, salted caramel Ralphius, triple barrel aged Ella, vanilla Ralphius, and white chocolate macadamia Ralphius. Right. I am going to be away when this is released, and I hope to God that there's some of this stuff left when I get back because it looks amazing. But the brewery will open its doors on Black Friday at 11 a.m. There will be a line for takeout that will begin in the front of the red door. So if you go actually to the Percocet Brewery, there's two doors. On the right-hand side, there's the one that goes into the regular tap room. On the left-hand side, it goes back into the production brewery. That's where they're going to be having the release. So line up early. They are not putting limits on the varieties except one bottle per limit on the Kopi Luwak variant. So that's what they're saying. And there's going to also be six Ralphius and two Ellas on tap for that day. So definitely check it out on Black Friday. I can't think of a better way of doing it. Stay away from the malls, head to the breweries. That's all I'm saying. So anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
I'm going to be going home after this, spending a weekend at home. It's my mom's birthday.
Happy birthday!
More importantly, no, I'm joking. I'm going to a concert tonight.
Oh, I see. What are you going to see?
I am going to go see a band called Tiny Moving Parts. Emo band.
There you go.
Down in Philly at the TLA.
Oh, cool. So, but TLA, yeah.
So they're more of like a – it's called like – they're part – Midwestern emo or like Skyrock, which is a lot of like, instead of like riffs, and stuff like that. The guitar rhythms use a lot of like arpeggios, mm-hmm. if you know what that is.
Yep.
Yeah, so he uses like a lot of arpeggios in their music, and a lot more like melodic like that. So something I'm going to have some fun with. My first show in like 3 years.
Wow, man.
Yeah, last concert I went to was Portugal the Man.
Yeah, just be prepared. You're going to go in there, you're going to feel old. I'm just telling you. Just wait.
Oh, no, my back is like when I was like 15 and 16, I always thought like the best shows were like me being one of like the only younger people there. I totally know like I'm going to be like one of the oldest people there tonight.
Kids today.
One of the things is like I've recently discovered this band, mm-hmm. so it's they're pretty new, like within the past like 5 years. So no, it's definitely going to be like all 16, 17 through like 21, 22 year olds, and then a few old heads.
Oh my god, it's gonna be funny.
But I will have this with me.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's what you want. So we'll give us an update on it next week. There you go. Gotta have snacks. That's all I'm saying. Well, that's cool. So one thing, a programming note, everybody, next week is going to be Black Friday, and we're going to have to skip next week's show. I should have mentioned this at the onset for people who don't make it all to the end, because my family and I were going actually away for Thanksgiving. So we're going to be out. We're going to be away from the family turkey stuff. And we are actually, I'm going to say it, we're going to Disney.
Are you really?
Yes.
When are you going to Disney?
Next week.
Okay.
It was Universal and Disney. We're actually staying over by Universal, but yeah.
Nice. So I went to, my family's going to Disney with my niece and newborn nephew.
We've never been. I've never been in my entire life. My wife's never been. My kids never, you know.
I've been there enough times where my mom's like, you want to go to Disney? I'm like, fuck no. I don't want to go to Disney.
Oh, so you've been before? I don't even know. Yeah, I've never been. All I know, Sean, is that I'm going because, look, I don't need to, like, all I know is that there's freaking Star Wars at Disney now. And I can walk around the Millennium Falcon. And all I'm saying, if I come back with a lightsaber, it's not my fault. It's for the kids.
But, I mean, it should be nice. Enjoy it. I mean, your kids will have a great time.
No, totally.
Then.
That's frankly,
do they know they're going to Disney?
I'm sorry, what?
Do they know? Or
yeah. Okay. Well, they're the reason why we're going. They've never had showed any interest at all in going. And then suddenly this year, they really started wanting to go. So we're going to go. and we figure it's going to be cool. And especially with the Star Wars, thing, what's nice about the Star Wars one at Disney, at least what I understand, right? And there's the Harry Potter world at Universal. It's the kind of thing where you don't have to stand in line for a bunch of rides and stuff. There are rides that you stand in line for, but it's just, you can walk around in this, in this world. And I think they're really excited about that stuff. Plus, my daughter started getting into the Descendants, the Disney movies. And so there's a couple little concerts and things we can go to. But mostly, they're excited about the hotels. Right? There's a pool that we can go swimming in. And so we're going to kind of take it low key. We're not going to try to go crazy with it. Neither one of us knows what the hell we're doing. Right. Everyone starts tells us about like, there's Fast Pass and you got to do this and you got to do that. Well, I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So I'm just going to nod to my head and I'm just going to let people tell me what to do when I get there. So there we have it. All right, man. Anything else for the good of the order?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right, man. Well, hey, have an awesome time tonight. Be careful. Be safe. Stay out of jail. It'd be good.
Yeah.
And please pass on happy birthday wishes to your mom.
Oh, I will.
All right, man. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. What? Raging Chicken Press. Right? I'm thinking too far ahead to Thanksgiving, I think. This has been Out to Coop Podcast once again. Thanks for sticking with us, everybody. Remember, become a member. Patreon.com/RC Press today. $5, everybody. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
See ya!
So I was upset with him that he wasn't fully telling us about all of the meetings that he was having. And he said to me, but I'm briefing the president. I'm briefing Chief of Staff Mulvaney. I'm briefing Secretary Pompeo, and I've talked to Ambassador Bolton. Who else do I have to deal with? And the point is, we have a robust interagency process that deals with Ukraine. It includes Mr. Holmes. It includes Ambassador Taylor as the chargé in Ukraine. It includes a whole load of other people. But it struck me when yesterday, when you put up on the screen Ambassador Sondland's emails and who was on these emails, and he said, these are the people who need to know, that he was absolutely right, because he was being involved in a domestic political errand. And we were being involved in national security foreign policy, and those two things had just diverged. So he was correct, and I had not put my finger on that at the moment, but I was irritated with him and angry with him that he wasn't fully coordinating. And I did say to him, Ambassador Sondland, Gordon, I think this is all going to blow up, and here we are.